Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Good afternoon and welcome to Straight No Chaser on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Katie Kiefer, and today we're going to be following up on vertical farming. I've been doing stories about this for about 3 years, and my guest today on the phone is Eric Cutter, the Managing Director of EnviroIngenuity, a company engaged in promoting and deploying alternative food and energy solutions using leading-edge technology. This led him to also become the Managing Director of Allegria Fresh, a new startup in Laguna Beach, California that utilizes high-efficiency hydroponic vertical farming systems to produce and distribute superior locally grown salad greens and vegetables. Mr. Cutter has over 35 years of experience in growing food using organic techniques and is a leading pioneer in developing the use of hydroponic vertical farm technologies that are far more resource efficient than traditional farming processes. Welcome to the program, Mr. Cutter. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Katie. What an intro. I'm going to have a hard time living up to that, I'll tell you.
Are you kidding? I felt like slitting my throat or alternatively sticking pins in a voodoo doll when I read your bio. I mean, talk about making me feel inadequate and just pathetic in every possible way. You have an incredible CV, man. Really amazing. But let's jump right into it. Let me say, first of all, that we were hoping to get Dixon Despommier, who is one of the leading proponents of vertical farming. I think it was his class about 10 years ago that started developing the models. Is that how you got interested in it?
I have to say that Dixon and his work with these students really inspired me to set forth on my current path, and I've always believed in high efficiency, resource efficient systems, which is what EnviroIngenuity is all about. And when I started reading about what he was planning to do with food and basically going up instead out, I was fascinated with that.
Yeah, it's an amazing story. I mean, he's such a cool guy. I'm sorry he wasn't with me today. He unfortunately double booked himself, and so I had to gracefully let him off the hook so that I could have him back another time.
I appreciate that. That means I'll get in three words edgewise.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I know. It's a challenge when Dixon's on the show. I mean, he's so enthusiastic and excited about his work. It's really great. But it's also really great that this has gone from sort of, you know, just kind of a pie in the sky dream to really something. The last time he was on the show, he was telling me about, you know, worldwide, there are a number of vertical farms growing up, and you have one of the first. Well, let's dive right into Allegria Farms. Like, it's, you have actual glass towers, right? You're not retrofitting something that is already existing like there is in Chicago where they used a meatpacking plant or something, but have real towers. Tell me about that.
Yeah, we're actually taking a very practical and current approach to the problem. My chief desire was to utilize the advantages and resources efficiencies of vertical farming, especially hydroponic vertical farming, in order to grow far superior nutritious foods and make it available to all of the trillionaires that live in Laguna Beach. And
right.
What's interesting is we have accomplished a small farm. We've done a prototype, and it's intentionally been designed as a demonstration farm. It's in 1,200 square feet. We are solar powered using basically 170 towers, six to seven stacks high, growing in sunlight. And we have not gone indoor yet. And the reason we haven't gone indoor yet is because that adds such an incredible capital cost. And when you're talking about the horticultural, the addition of horticultural LEDs, and you know, obviously other buildings and facilities, et cetera, that are required. So I've approached this from a very simple standpoint in order to educate people on two words. One is vertical, and the other is hydroponic. Vertical, obviously, was very fascinating to people, and they saw that we could actually achieve 10 to 15 times yield, 2.5 times faster production. Plants are growing at a rate of 2.5 to 3 times faster in these towers. 90% less water, 50% less fertilizer, 70% less land and zero toxic pesticides.
Amazing.
So those were the claims that were made by Vertigro, which is a company been in business for 16 years. Tim Carpenter, 72-year-old, very crotchety but incredibly knowledgeable organic chemist. His systems are featured at the Epcot Center in Orlando, Florida.
Right.
2 years ago, I tested many different systems, and I kept coming back to the Vertigro system because of its cost effectiveness and its ease of use more than anything.
So
and
these his
having
towers.
A brother with two kids that won't eat lettuce kind of inspired me to. I said, right. Okay, they can text like monsters, but they can't survive if we have an earthquake. They can't grow anything. So I chose this system, and I actually started developing these systems at my house. And I watched my brother's kids, who don't eat fresh greens, all of a sudden start interacting with these towers and picking off of it and eating, and the lights went on.
Amazing.
So I thought, wow, maybe I can connect youth back to our food supply. Maybe I can reverse engineer the idea that food comes from supermarkets and not farms. And maybe, if we're really lucky, we can create jobs by creating a produce route. In other words, teach these kids how to grow food, enough of it to supply local pockets in their community.
Cool.
And that's exactly what Alegria Fresh has done. We have a produce route instead of a paper route. Two interns employed now. At 4 o'clock, we start picking an array of about 15 to 17 very highly nutritious greens and medicinal herbs. And we arrange them in a beautiful bouquet, and we deliver within 1 hour to about, so we're doing about 15 deliveries a day right now, and plan on, it's going off the charts. So I've basically got to build farms.
Wow. So, now, let's go back for a second to the structure that you're talking about in the Vertigro, because you said something that intrigued me that I hadn't realized. These are actually outdoors. They are not encased in plastic. They're just sort of basically plastic towers. How high up do they go?
We actually, it's actually an EPS foam pot. We're working on a different type of design there for that. But this pot works fantastic because it insulates the roots. So it's really good in both warm and cold climates.
Uh-huh.
It's very lightweight, so it allows you to stack 6 to 7 pots high. And thereby, you know, for example, in 18 square inches, 1.5 square feet, we actually grow 60 plants.
Wow.
Growing up. And it's dripped off the top. It's a drip hydroponic system where it actually drips down into a collector pot on the top and then completely drips through the 7 or 8. You can go as high as 10 if you want, but a better number is 6 to 7 depending on the flow rate you want.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually drips down through each of the pots into a bottom pot where we have another crop. So this allows us to put 60 plants in 1.5 to 2 square feet.
And this
that's very high density, but
yeah,
you can do it.
But there's both a commercial model and a consumer model for this product, right? Am I right?
Yeah, you bet. We call them the home gardens. That consists of a little enclosed tank. It's about a 10-gallon, 12-gallon tank.
Uh-huh.
A little pump in it pumps it up a pipe through a little bubbler at the top and then drops it back down, and so it recirculates. So you get about a 92% water retention feature on that, and you can grow 24 to 28 plants in that little system. So it's basically a beautiful little herb garden you can pick, and it takes up 2 square feet.
Uh-huh. Fantastic. And you can grow all your lettuces, et cetera. And if you're in a warm climate, I assume you can do it all year round, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're very fortunate in Laguna Beach. We have, we average, you know, 20 degree swing from 70 to 85, 90 degrees max. And so mm-hmm. we have perfect growing conditions all year round. And
yeah.
That's the reason we're growing outside. We're actually building indoor systems much like Dixon has designed. We're working on several demonstration systems right now that 200 square foot interior systems that'll grow upwards of one acre of food each.
Wow. How many stories up does that go, or how many feet up does that require?
Well, we're going to use the same vertical stacking system.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of people, you know, growing food now in shipping containers, etc.
Actually, this radio station is in a shipping container, Eric.
Yeah, absolutely. these are the modules. Well, yeah, and the reason for it is very simple. There's many, many unused shipping containers around. You can stack shipping containers. You can actually develop mobile emergency crisis farms, only a couple hundred square feet to produce 50 times that yield coming out of a shipping container. So, for example, what happened in Fukushima, for example. We would be able to ship, load 100 shipping containers full of vertical farming equipment with indoor lighting and temperature controls, et cetera, all digitally monitored, put them on a boat, ship them over to Japan, and, basically you've got food production instantly.
Well, you had a recent visit from the Japanese.
These are different ideas on how people are approaching the problem.
Yeah. You had a recent visit from the Japanese, from some Japanese organization. You want to talk about that for a second? Because obviously this feeds right into that.
No, that was fascinating. We had a delegation from Anju, Japan, mm-hmm. come and see us. And even though the Japanese are leaders in vertical farming technology, they came to see us. And I was curious as to why. Well, the model, I have a background in biochemistry and in oncology, and therefore I understand what food can do to the body, especially raw greens.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a huge proponent, although I'm not a vegan. I mean, you take my Manchego cheese and my Barolo away from me and my grass-fed bison, and I'm pissed. But,
thank God.
I eat a lot of raw greens, and I'm 55 years old and still play competitive AAA volleyball as a result, so I know it works.
Mm-hmm.
So here come the Japanese, and I thought, why are they coming to see me? Well, after a bout with two translators, we finally found out that they were very curious as to why I was growing the certain crops I was growing. And that's kind of the secret to what we're doing in Laguna Beach right now, which is no longer a secret. It's taking 15 to 17 wonderful, high-power, nutrient-rich greens, such as the red and green romaines, the different basils. For example, we grow a lot of Japanese shiso basil, which was really nice to have when the delegation arrived.
Yeah.
And I grow a lot of eggplant, Japanese eggplant, of course. And so they looked at these crops and they said, wow, what's the biochemical curve of this when you eat it together? I said, it's off the charts. I said, this is the most nutritious salad you could ever eat if you blend it.
Uh-huh.
And I said, it's really not just about the system, that we're using the vertical system, which is a high yield. We call it high performance urban agriculture.
Right.
That's our system. But it really doesn't matter what you grow this in, as long as you grow this quality of food and then consume it very quickly.
Right. Well,
this is where you get the big power bank.
You lead me on to something interesting that I was curious about, because I'm going to be doing some work in coming shows about genetically modified organisms and GMO seeds and so on. Tell me a little bit about hydroponic seeds versus conventional farming, conventional seeds for, land farming or ground farming or whatever you want to call it. Is there a big difference between them, or is it the same? Do you crossbreed for hydroponics?
I'm an organic farmer. Yeah, I'm an organic farmer, as you identified from way back, and mm-hmm. I absolutely believe in organic farming. But unfortunately, organic farmers, due to return on investment concerns, a lot of them are cheating a little bit, and the problem with maintaining beautifully well balanced live organic soil there are huge problems associated with that. We grow soil-less, which is what hydroponics is about.
Right.
We grow and you can use many different mediums. We actually have chosen coir, which is a ground-up coconut husk that's very sustainable. It comes from mainly the equatorial part of the world. There's tons of it. And when we pull plants out, we actually just rinse our coir and put new plants back in. So mm-hmm. we actually recycle our soil. Now, what that means is this media is basically inert. Therefore, it needs to be nutrified.
Uh-huh.
This is where I really found the big advantage in hydroponic farming over organic row farming. I can actually put exactly the correct nutrients on the plant right at the root when I want to, and I can change my mixtures. If, for example, I want to push flowers on a tomato plant a little bit, I might punch the phosphorus just a tiny bit, and mm-hmm. as soon as the flowers start setting fruit, I'll bring the calcium nitrate back up, which adds sugar. So all of a sudden now the plant does not need to use its energy to develop roots to go out and find all these nutrients. It just sits there like, I have this example of a kid sitting on a couch, and you feed him perfectly three times a day. He gets fat and happy. Not very good for a kid, but excellent for a plant.
That's a great analogy.
So our plants are very, very healthy because they sit there and get fed three times a day on mm-hmm. a 5-minute drip. A 60-plant stack takes 1 gallon of water to feed. 60
Amazing.
Plants, 1 gallon of water. So well, you can see how resource efficient it is.
I can.
Mm-hmm. They make really tiny root balls, and so they put all their energy into forward growth.
Right.
And so two things happen. They get incredibly healthy, grow very quickly, and they absorb nutrients rapidly, which makes these plants, for example, my lettuce we've been doing tissue testing has 6 to 7 times the potassium load than anything you can get in our finest organic stores.
Wow.
Now, it's not a fair fight because I'm picking mine, 10 minutes and measuring it versus an average of 3 days of transportation of
sure.
all this other lettuce.
Right, right.
But the point is that this is, this is what we've got to get to. We've got to get to a decentralized, in the urban environment, of many, many hundreds and hundreds of small farms whereby we can give access of super, we're talking minutes. We're not talking farm to table in 500 miles. We're talking farm to table in minutes to people in the urban environment.
Right.
Now you've given them incredibly healthy, nutritious food and at a very high rate and very great resource efficiency.
So amazing.
That's what we're using vertical farming for. I mean, I really want to, mm-hmm. I want to deliver fabulous food. I'm a chef as well, so you can imagine that I've got my personal salad bar now that nobody's got.
Okay, now I am definitely sticking pins in the voodoo doll. Eric, give me 1 second. We have to take a 30-second sponsor drop break here, and we'll be right back. Please stay on the line, and folks, please stay tuned for more with Eric Cutter from Alegria Farms.
Ranch grass-fed beef, pasture raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
And we are back on Straight No Chaser on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Katie Kiefer, and on the line with me today is Eric Cutter, the Managing Director of EnviroIngenuity and the genius behind Alegria Fresh, a new hydroponic vertical farming project out in Laguna Beach, California. Thanks so much again, Eric, for joining us. So let's go back to this. There's a couple things that we only have a few minutes left, so I want to get into some really major stuff here, which is, vertical farming models are at the moment, shall we say, not the most cost effective, especially the ones that are inside or enclosed.
Right.
So is there a point where, my question is what point does vertical farming become as cost efficient as conventional farming methods? And is that dependent on distribution or is that dependent on just building your infrastructure and then waiting for the profits to roll in?
Well, I do believe partially in build it and they will come as long as it's something fantastically nutritious. But if you look at traditional agribusiness right now, and I don't consider traditional agribusiness my enemy. I consider it very flawed, though. And I believe that if vertical farming is actually going to go mainstream, especially indoor, which I highly believe in, I think Dixon's ideas about indoor farming are absolutely, now that's genius.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm very practical. Where we're headed, that is definitely the future of farming, the future of food.
Mm-hmm.
From a carbon footprint standpoint, from a redeployment of thousands and thousands of old buildings that are not going to do anything, but we can. I mean, look what's going on in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Returning to agriculture in Detroit. Taking these old auto buildings and refurbishing and going that direction. We got to go that way.
Yep, so Chicago too.
The planet's going to continue to grow. Yeah, absolutely. And the plant in Chicago is fantastic. What a great vision.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is all going to happen. I believe that what will really have to happen in the short term is we're going to have to subsidize vertical farming just like we do traditional agribusiness. I mean, from what I understand, there's a $260, $270 billion farm bill out there that supports monocropping of the Midwest.
It's actually a lot more than that, but yeah.
Trickle down to vertical farming and start, you know, helping out these higher yield, much more resource efficient concepts. Mm. Until that happens, I don't think the playing field will be anywhere near equal.
But so are you seeing any interest in companies?
Probably going to swing it.
But do you see interest in companies like Driscoll or Andy Boy or any of the other big, you know, greens, berries? I understand that berries are a good candidate for hydroponics.
Absolutely.
Are those companies coming forward and are they interested in what you're doing? Do you feel like there's any chance that some of these really big, giant agribusinesses are going to start investing at least a little bit into this kind of technology?
I think they have to. I mean, take the example of solar. I mean, look at BP Oil and look at BP Solar. I mean, one of the biggest solar producers in the world. I think they're all going to get in. I think it's just a matter of money. I mean, where are the profits mm-hmm. now, and where will the profits be in the future? So, unfortunately, we are a world that's driven primarily by money.
Oh yeah.
Therefore, we will exhaust what is what makes the most money, whether it's, you know, eco-friendly or not, before we get to the eco-friendly part. I mean, I'm a very big supporter of the three P's. You know, it's people, planet, profit, in that order. And if everybody thought that way, I think we'd have a different planet. But it's, unfortunately, it's usually profit, people, planet.
Yeah.
That's the reverse order. So I do believe that vertical farming is going to be incredibly successful. I have found a small, very, very scalable model that works in a very densely packed urban environment. And mm-hmm. I'm actually very close to being profitable on 1,200 square feet of production, which is unheard
Amazing.
Of.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm almost breaking even, and I've only got 1,200 feet of vertical production in production.
Yeah, that's incredible.
And by the way, a rule in organic farming, I believe, and it may be incorrect, but I think it takes about 1,000 square feet to feed one person. I'm feeding about 50 out of my 1,000 square feet.
Wow, that's an impressive statistic. We only have about 4 minutes left, so let's talk a little bit about, you know, in the future we face amazing water shortages. I shouldn't say amazing. We face predictable water shortages.
Yeah.
And obviously hydroponic farming is a much more resource-friendly way of growing food.
90%.
Yeah. So, what are other countries besides Japan coming to you or even to Dixon to talk about designs and assistance? And what about our own water challenge states like Arizona, Texas, New Mexico, et cetera? Places where people really shouldn't be living, but are.
Yeah, we've been contacted by many different groups. I'm sure Dixon has been contacted by everybody on the planet.
Yeah, I think he has.
I'm looking at them, you know, the Middle East is an unbelievable place. They've got tons of money and no water. And if you look at our planet, I mean, we're not short on oil. That's fabricated because it makes money.
Yeah.
We are short on two major elements, and that is soil
mm-hmm.
and water.
Yeah.
And those two, I think, are starting to come out as very critical elements that we need to start addressing. And if you're going to get into any type of, I mean, vertical farming can be done, performed in many ways. But no matter what, we have to go that direction. We've got to go up. We can't continue to go out, and we have to go towards the resource efficiencies that mm-hmm. vertical farming allow. I mean, it's just, we have to. Especially from the water standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's sort of almost incredible I know Dixon is all over the world, you know, is preaching the gospel to people, but it really does blow my mind that there isn't just an enormous rush to develop this technology and to, you know, start building these structures as fast as they can, especially, as you say, in places like the Middle East where water is basically non-existent, or sub-Saharan Africa. I mean, all of these areas where food is always at a crisis point, and where we see food riots breaking out all the time already because of shortages in just staples. How about rice? Can you grow rice in a vertical farm?
You probably, not a crop I would even attempt to grow in a vertical farm. I think you can grow almost anything if you vertical, it can be stacked. Or stacked adjacent to each other. So it really depends on how you design the vertical farm. For example, I grow a lot of different berry crops. I can grow strawberries on top of each other, but I will grow blueberries in 5-gallon pots hydroponically. So I grow them side by side, and I can have blueberries stacked above each other. Now it's a vertical farm, but they're not connected.
I see.
So it depends on the type of crop you have. I mean, many crops are stackable, where they actually can be touching each other in different pots, and that's what I focus on.
Uh-huh.
I think the most important thing is that when you look at the world's soil condition, we spent 200 years wiping out our soil and just raping it and, you know, throwing more and more nitrates on it until it was basically salted. I mean, you look at our San Joaquin Valley here in California, one of the most prolific producers of food in the world, and half of it's salted over now. We have to change. There is no choice. And so I think that we're going to have many, many different models. My model works beautiful in a very densely packed urban environment.
Uh-huh.
It makes no sense at all if you've got tons of rich farmland.
Right.
Because
well,
it's still cheaper to use the sun and grow food on thousands of acres than spend, you know, money stacking pots.
Well,
but if you're in the city where all these people are, you got to change.
Yeah,
and
it makes sense.
You also want access to food that's a half hour old. It's the only way you can do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, just
it's basically like the modern version of a victory garden.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I look at. I mean, I remember in my grandfather in the 40s, everybody grew food. 50% of Americans grew their own food.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, we've gotten completely disconnected from our food supply. And nutrition problems such as diabetes and obesity are skyrocketing. And we got kids here in Laguna Beach with, you know, billion-dollar families. They're getting diabetes at 13. That's food. So that has to change, and that's my focus. I've got a team of nutritionists, biochemists, holistic healers, energy healers. I mean, we're a bunch of woo-woo kind of people.
I'll say.
That are actually trendsetters that understand the high power nutrition of foods and
superfoods.
It's going to grow them at a high yield. Yeah, it's superfoods. That's exactly what I'm growing. Superfoods.
Well, I love that idea.
In high yield fashion.
It's a very cool concept. I hope you'll come back and talk about this again. I want to keep track of what's going on with your farm. I love the idea that you're developing a produce route instead of a paper route for kids. I think that's a great concept. It's really, really a good idea. And it is true. It's been proven over and over again that school gardens do lead to children eating, you know, at least a more widely diverse diet instead of just focusing on snack foods and starches. Is there anything you want to promote here before we wrap it up?
Yeah, I wanted to finish with one comment, and
sure.
This is where I think Dixon is absolutely, he's the genius here. He actually challenged kids to rethink this thing, and kids, I mean youth.
Mm-hmm.
His class came up with this comment, this idea, I think it was back in 1999 or so.
Yes.
And I have watched youth just become incredibly empowered by just getting back to, you know, understanding what natural systems are and how our planet works. And it's interesting that vertical farming, if you teach a kid anything about vertical farming, he understands, when he's finished learning how to vertical farm, he understands biology, chemistry, construction, engineering, electrical, all the skill sets he needs to survive.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So vertical farming becomes an amazing curriculum to reconnect our kids to everything and make them, you know, more self-reliant.
Yeah, practical.
I think if this country doesn't become more self-reliant, we're crazy.
Yes.
And that's kind of that's the real driving force behind what I'm doing, is giving these tools to kids to get them to think like I do. You know, don't take anything verbatim. Think yourself right out of that box, get into a new box, and redesign it. And let's get America, if I can sound like Mitt Romney for a second, let's get America back up and running. You know, but it's our kids that have to do that.
Oh, yeah. They face some very serious challenges.
Give them the tools, and this is a great tool.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, Eric, thank you very much for joining me today on the program. Folks, next week, oh, and by the way, you can look at Eric's website, either EnviroIngenuity or Allegria Fresh, right? AllegriaFresh.com?
Yeah, and it's Allegria. Allegria is the Spanish word for joy, happiness, and general merriment. And when you add tequila, it really gets fun.
Okay, babes. That's my recipe for success. Thanks again, Eric. We will see you again, I hope, sometime soon. And next week, folks, we'll be talking about GMO crops as we anticipate the presidential election and Proposition 37, which is going to be voted on in California about mandatory labeling for GMO crops, I'm hoping that my guest will be Michael Hansen from the Consumers Union, who lectures all around the world about GMO crops and is an extremely knowledgeable guy. And also, as you know, Consumers Union is a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization, so no agenda from him. Anyway, thanks for the listening, and this has been your host, Katie Kiefer, on Straight No Chaser. Thank you to my sponsor, Hearst Ranch, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.